Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. We've got some people in the comments already. Abdul TS, Dr. Daywalker, Sheratan KD, and Learning Videos by Nikhil. So hello to you guys as well. And the premise of this live show is, we've got like 10,000 injuries building up to the Champions Trophy. Jared, can you remember any other ICC event in which like 75% of the players that we're looking forward to were injured?
I feel like it happens almost every time. like there's no way around it, is there? Like, if you think back to what happened with Sri Lanka in the last couple of tournaments, right? Like, did they have any of their fastball? Might have been the two tournaments before then. Did they have any fast bowlers available? Then you've also got retirements, which keep happening now, right? So I think it's pretty common. It's just that, you know, because cricket's played in such a weird way, it's very rare for you to know who's fit and who's not fit, right?
Yeah.
And because of that, I think then you get this sudden influx at an ICC event. You suddenly realize, oh, wow, no one's available. I mean, this feels like a little bit more over the top than to me, but it's within the range of normal, I would say.
Yeah, I think cricket is in desperate need of an injury tracker. You know how when you play fantasy football, and by football I mean soccer, you get all of those details within the app so that you know who to sub in and sub out. And there is no way to track injuries at that scale in cricket. And it's such a piss off if I think about it sometimes, you know. But we're going to...
It's such a stupid thing. And it's funny, people will say to me all the time, oh, I don't know what to cover, you know, in cricket or whatever. It's like, literally cover the injuries, right? And you'd be ahead of the game.
Yeah, well, we're going to try and make sense of all that we know. And shout out to Ari, our teammate, who really helped me with kind of consolidating this list of absentees. I say absentees because most of these players are injured, but some of them have pulled out for personal reasons. And then, of course, some of them have retired. Let's start with Australia, Jared, because this is the longest list in front of me. I'll read it out loud to you. Pat Cummins and Josh Hazlewood are out injured, so they won't be participating in the Champions Trophy. Mitch Stark has pulled out for personal reasons. Mitch Marsh is always injured, so that's not new. And Cam Green has been injured since forever, so that's also technically not new. Marcus Stoinis retired from ODI cricket, so that was an interesting one. My question to you is, who's going to bowl for Australia?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I remember there was a Champions Trophy, must have been the last one actually, when the Australians were like, they took it seriously, but like in the last 5 minutes or something. And I remember there being lots of talk about their bowling attack and, you know, whether they played a lot of ODI cricket and all these sorts of things. And you look at it now, it's like they would kill for their best players actually being available or healthy. So yeah, I would assume that's, well, I don't know. He's maybe the best answer. But I would assume that it's probably Spencer Johnson at one end with the new ball and Aaron Hardy at the other end. They've actually been playing Aaron.
What about Ben Duarshuis?
I can't imagine. The thing is, good on him for making it to this level. He's one of those players who he can actually do some things. Whether he's international quality or not, I don't know. But if you watch him on the right day, you'd be like, this guy's one of the best players in the world. If you watch him on the worst day, you're just like, this guy should be in club cricket. Like, he really does fluctuate really wildly. I wouldn't be giving him... I think Spencer is just a better bowler by a long distance. But Duarshuis can hit. Not that his batting will be that useful in one day, but he's won some... I think he might have won them a game not that long ago in a Big Bash again. Last season, like about once every season in the Big Bash, he seems to do something special. So he can hold a bat, but no, I would go with Spencer at one end. And I think they'll go with Aaron Hardy at the other end, just because they've actually used Aaron Hardy quite a bit with the new ball. Like it's surprising how much he's bowled with the new ball. I think, you know, I'm one of the world's biggest fans of Aaron Hardy, and I wouldn't use him with the new ball. But they certainly seem to think that way. Nate Ellis will play.
Yep.
When Ellis bowls will be interesting, because he might bowl first change and then obviously come on more in the middle and then towards the end.
Yep.
They've also got, whether they want to go with Duarshuis or if they want to go with Abbott, in those two guys, they've got guys who can bowl but also help them a little bit more with the batting, which Ellis and Johnson doesn't do, right? So they're not really going to give you all that much. So I think the Stoinis thing doesn't help. But I do think they were kind of leaning towards this sort of all-roundery style of play, you know, because you can have, you've got Maxwell, you've got Short, you've got Hardy. If you've got Abbott as well, you suddenly actually have quite a sort of, you know, a good collection of different people who can do a little bit on both sides of the ball. And I think that that might be the direction that they have to go. I think they're still second favourites for the tournament. A lot of that says has a lot to do with the fact that no one ever bets on South Africa.
So also, with Australia, everyone, like, whatever team they take to a tournament, you always have this inkling that they might just win it at the end of the day, right? So that's just
Have you, in your lifetime, have you ever seen them win with a team like this?
No.
So it'd be pretty random, wouldn't it? Like, like, if you go back, the 87 World Cup team actually was a pretty good team on paper. And they probably, on top of everything else, the one thing they probably worked out was slower balls when no one else had. They had like three bowlers bowling slower balls in that tournament. So that was a big advantage in that particular tournament, despite the fact they didn't have very good spin bowlers. What's the other one? The Nathan Horrocks, Nathan Bracken team won a Champions Trophy.
2009 or 11, I can't quite recall now. There was one of those teams. Yeah, 2009. Varun is confirmed.
Am I wrong in saying that Nathan Bracken would be the best bowler in this side by a distance?
Yeah, I suppose that's like, correct.
You know what I mean? So when people say things like, oh, they always find a way, like, you know, you and I watch quite a bit of cricket. Like, I'm not sure they've ever had a side like this before.
Yeah.
And I know there's been, you know, a lot of talk about Australia doesn't care about it and everything else. Like, if you go back and you have a look at that side, actually, what was it? Was it 2009 or was it the other one that Nathan Bracken won? I can't remember now. But
he
if
might
you
have
look
been
back
in both.
At, yeah, he might have been actually. Yeah. They still had Brett Lee, Mitchell Johnson, Shane Watson, like in 2009. That's Brett Lee and Mitchell Johnson. Again, their first choice in this attack, right? Like, the best bowler in this line, the best outside of Zampa, right? The best bowler, you know, as a specialist is Spencer Johnson, right?
Yeah.
And let's just have a look. He's played 11 List A games, and in them, he averages 42. Like, I think he'll be good. He's played three ODIs as well. I actually think he'll be really good eventually, but this is not his format, right? And he's the best specialist bowler of, you know, Abbott and Dwarshuis and some of the other guys. And then you've got Alice, who's probably the second best, a very good bowler. Again, probably, though, a specialist T20 bowler.
Yeah.
So it's a bit, it's just a bit weird, I think, all things considered. So they can put a team together. I don't think there's any issue with that. But whether it's a winning team, I certainly would not be betting on them.
Yeah, no, I think I echo that sentiment, especially with that bowling attack, right? At least I can't remember an ICC tournament in which they've gone without all three of Stark, Hazelwood, and Cummins, right? We thought Stark will be available, but he's pulled out last minute as well. And, you know, Nathan Ellis, I think, is a terrific death ball bowler, right? Like death overs bowler. He has a really good slower one. And Spencer Johnson is quick, right? Apart from that, you know, Zampa's 10 overs will be, sure, he could be very, very reliable, and he was Australia's hero in the group stages of the ODI World Cup 2 years ago. But, you know, I was also surprised, much like Sheratan KD in the comments, not to see Xavier Bartlett, because they had been playing him a lot and he's not there, right? That's a...
But again, does that upgrade this team?
Probably not, right?
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you're both right. In the fact that I think they have played him in a lot of cricket. But I don't think that upgrades the team. It's just another dude, right? Yeah. Like, you know, Riley Meredith, you could throw Riley Meredith in. You know, you could, you know, I would only assume that Jai Richardson is injured because Jai Richardson is always injured. So I don't know where Jai Richardson is. Jai Richardson's probably the only one that I would say upgrades that team a little bit, right? If you've got Jai Richardson, you've got Nathan Ellis, and you've got... and then you can pick in one of the two more all-roundery guys. I think then you're picking something quite handy. But other than that, you're kind of just picking between people that you're not sure about. Spencer Johnson should be a good one-day bowler. I know his numbers from 11 games don't show that, but he should be a good one-day bowler. But it's barren.
Yeah, and I mean, you spoke of all-roundery players, and they've lost three in Mitch Marsh, Stoinis, and Cam Green, right? So, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see, like, okay, the bowling attack doesn't look great, but can Australia out-bat teams? If Travis Head has a day, of course. If Glenn Maxwell injures his hamstring or something and smashes Afghanistan out of the park on one leg, sure. But apart from Head and Maxwell, I don't see any players in that playing 11, which could take the game away from the opposition, right? That's the worrisome part.
Yeah, I suppose if Short opens with head and then you've got Maxwell later on, you've probably got something within that lineup that can explode, but it's not the kind of team they can put together, right?
Yeah. And Manus is out of form. Smith is in form, but hasn't done well in the Sri Lankan ODIs. And he's a bit slow, of course. So, yeah.
Inglis can get stuck as well. So, they've kind of, in those three guys, got three guys who are really quite similar. I know Inglis can probably has a gear that the other two don't have as much anymore. But, some of this depends on what kind of tournament it is. If it ends up being the kind of tournament that allows you to knock the ball around, maybe Australia have a good lineup for this, right? You know, they've got proper players in that middle order. If it ends up being a tournament where you have to score at a runner ball like all the time, you know, good luck, right? Yeah. But I think against Sri Lanka, Hardy batted at 7, and then they've had people like Abbott at 8 and, you know, whatever. That is the other way of going, but I can't see how that's going to change how Smith, Manus or Inglis is going to bat.
Exactly. But like having Abbott over there in the lower middle order or whatever, number 8, it does help because I feel like he's a better batter at this time of his career or at this point of his career as opposed to being a better bowler. But yeah, I mean, you look at that squad, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, which is, you know, contrary to Australian teams of past ICC events. So let's see how they fare. It is the group of death that they're in and it'll be exciting. Let's move on to the other team whose name starts with A, Afghanistan, right? Now, Group B is so interesting because you've got 2 or 3 out-of-form teams going in there, right? In Australia, England, and South Africa. And Afghanistan have actually done fairly well since the last ODI World Cup. And they were pretty decent in that event as well. In fact, they had a good shot at making the semis, if not for Glenn Maxwell. But they've got 2 injuries which will hurt them. They rely on spin bowling and their new off-spin bowling sensation, Allah Mohammad Ghazanfar, is out injured. And then Mujeeb, I think, isn't fit right now either. So they'll be relying heavily on Rashid Khan and Noor Ahmed. Do you think that it's a big hit or will they manage?
I think Mujeeb's just been real fit.
Oh, has he?
And it's you guys in the comments in this one are going to have to update us on all of this because it is literally changing on a minute by minute. But I thought I got an... I could be wrong. I thought I got an alert on my phone saying that he'd been put into the squad, Mujeeb. So, look. In Rashid Khan and Noor Ahmed, put in Varun Chakravarti, and I've got them as 2 of the 3 best spinners in T20 cricket. I don't know if Noor Ahmed is quite as good in one-day cricket just because he has the ability to bowl more bad balls than Varun and Rashid Khan does.
Absolutely.
Having said that, watching him bowl in the SA20 at times, I was like, oh, he might be ready to take the big jump up. Someone just said that Mujeeb was named as Ghazanfar's replacement for the IPL. I said he was a replacement. I thought I saw it come up on my phone. I don't know. Mujeeb's been bowling great in one day cricket anyway. So they've got the 2 main spinners. They've got another backup spinner who's not too bad as well, whose name I've forgotten as well.
Kharote. Nangaliaf Kharote. It's a tongue twister. Yep. But then Mohammad Nabi's still around, right?
The president. And Mohammad Nabi, I was going to say.
Probably nearing his 50th birthday, but won't leave another ICC event.
That means it's 25 overs of spin. It's quite a challenge going up against a right-arm wrist spinner and a left-arm wrist spinner of the quality of those two back-to-back. It's just, for me, you know, occasionally at these major tournaments, Rashid Khan has got lost a little bit. Like he can play, if he has to play at his best, if he plays at his best and then Noah plays at his best, there's still a genuine final chance. Yeah. Right? Like I wasn't putting too much stock in Ghazanfar because I'd seen him bowl well and then I'd seen him actually get picked a little bit more. And if they're playing on wickets that really rag, Nabi's going to bowl an extra five to seven overs. And Kharote is, as I said, I've seen him bowl. I think he's very good as well. So they've got a bit, their issue really is, I think they can cover the spin. I don't know what they do with seam bowling because Naveen has been so important. And you look at some of their best wins, he's either bowling well at the top or bowling well at the bottom. Faruqi's good, but Faruqi doesn't have a partner now, right?
Yep.
Is Omazai going to have to bowl more? We've seen him in T20 cricket struggle.
I think Omazai will have to share the new ball with Faruqi. And I love Fazal Haq Faruqi with the new ball, right? He's done exceptionally well for himself. But that is a big question mark for Afghanistan. Like Gulbuddin will be back, rolling his arm and bowling a couple and maybe clutching on his hamstring. Who knows?
Oh my God, I forgot he was in the squad. Yeah, so I think that's their big issue. If the middle does well, they're not going to make scores that kill people. So their top or their tail is going to... They don't have to be great at both, but they have to be good at one or the other. And they're going to have to be able to kind of hold that together. So Abdullah says, Omazai is a good bowler. He's a good third or fourth seamer.
Yeah,
he's not.
Sometimes he does really well with the new ball, but I haven't seen him do well once the ball gets old.
He can swing it early. Sometimes he can't control it, though. Sometimes he's not in control of the ball. And so in T20 cricket, he can get away with that because he's usually bowling when the ball's swinging. In one-day cricket, we've seen him before struggle a little bit. And it's fine, again, if you have Naveen there, because then he's the third seamer, and him and Nubby can share the other overs, right? You look at their side now and you're like, okay, it doesn't feel quite as good. So there's definitely an issue there. Cricket media used to be pretty simple. Find your favourite newspaper, head to Cricket Info, and maybe a blog you'd like. Now just finding the best stories and writing is a huge challenge. You already have a job. You just want to read about cricket. Well, that is what the best of cricket is currently doing. They go out daily to find the newest cricket coverage and the best stories from any publication in the world. And when they can't discover what they want, they also hire some of the best writers to produce their own great stories. You can get the best of cricket via their website or on WhatsApp. They find cricket's best stories and give them to you every day.
Well, at least with respect to their batting, I would say that they have a lot of depth now because the only out-and-out bowler would be Fazal Haq Farooqi. Everyone else can bat. So that's a plus. But then again, they've got some really anchory players. Like Rehmat Shah is the sort of dude who could score a ton, but would probably take 180 deliveries to score that ton, right? That's their issue, I feel. And Gurbaz, like, he's going to be the man who has to perform well if Afghanistan are to qualify for the semis, at least for me.
Yeah, so I think they're probably going to bat around Gurbaz and
Zadran.
Yeah. That's kind of what they like to do. It's interesting how often, and they do this in T20 cricket too, they get to a really good position at like 200 for two or something, right? And you're like, oh, this is when they kick on. They almost always either slow down or fall apart, right? If we assume that that keeps happening, that's why the Naveen thing is really important.
Yep.
Right? So I think that's the issue that they're going to have there. They're not going to make scores. The other issue they're going to have is if this is a flat Pakistani wicket tournament, they're just not going to score quick enough, right?
That's
and,
true.
You know, then you almost need Noor and Rashid to be at the top of their form all the way through. I backed them at 33-1. I think they're about 17-1 at the moment. So I'm already well ahead on that bet. I don't feel as confident right at the moment as I did a little while ago. But if the two, having watched Noor Ahmed in the SA20, there's still a huge chance. If they can clump down the middle overs, you still have to go through them. And Australia don't have a full team. South Africa have their issues. And England is playing the worst cricket of the four teams, right? So, you know, Afghanistan have a real chance of going through to the next round.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling the same way. If I had to pick a dark horse, I would pick Afghanistan. Especially, I'll tell you what, they're going to get some support over here in Pakistan because of the refugee situation, right? So a lot of Afghan refugees will turn up for these games, I'm assuming. And that'll make some for some really good, like, it will be a bit of a spectacle because they've never had that sort of a home crowd before. So that's what looking really, really forward to. Anyway, let's move towards England, of course. Only one injury that I know of, which is Jacob Bethel, and he was new to the scene anyway. But you know, injuries or no injuries, England aren't playing the sort of cricket that we got so used to. Like, they're not white hot anymore and they cannot play spin. That's been their issue. But if you see some of those surfaces be flat Pakistan decks, then England are in the game, right?
Yeah, they still have lots of issues. But yes, no, I think you're right. I think you watch them against India and the big problem is that they are still slogging.
Yeah.
And you can't slog for 40 overs. Right? Like, it's just hard. It's just hard to get do that. And their attacking shots are so unrepeatable, is the best way of putting it. You can get away with a couple, but you can't get away with that many. They can't play spin, as you said, which is a huge issue. They don't have a lot of injuries, but they also don't. I mean, if they have a couple of injuries, I don't know what the hell they're going to do.
Yeah. Also, you were commenting on the India versus England ODIs and even the T20s, if I'm not wrong. And Jofra Archer is finally back from injury and he's been bowling a bit. What's he been like? Because I've been getting a lot of like hot and cold feelings with respect to Jofra. There was this one game in which he'd bowled the first four overs and gone for three runs and picked up a wicket. But that's pretty much the best he's done since coming back, right?
Yeah, a part of the problem is the pressure at the other end as well at times. I thought there was a couple of times when both bowlers were going okay, although there was, maybe the time when the bowlers were doing the best was, I think, one day when Mark Wood and Mahmood were bowling together and it was swinging. Jofra probably would have done pretty well. He bowled some good spells, he bowled some good micro spells, but he looks a little bit out of ideas. Mm. And like in the old days, he didn't, even though he's a very smart bowler, he didn't have to be that smart, right? Like, I'm just going to bowl back of a length and no one's going to hit me because it comes on in a way that is really, really awkward. So I don't think he bowled poorly in that series. He didn't bowl Jofra in that series. So do you know what I mean? If you're looking for peak Jofra, peak Jofra is basically a lockdown bowler, right? Yeah. He's not quite at that level. The problem is just how they fit everything together. So Mark Wood, I don't know where they're going to bowl him. Like, I don't actually know how he fits in. So I think now watching them play, they're probably going to try and go Jofra and Mark Wood at the top. And then, but the thing is that Mark Wood was originally being trained to be the Liam Plunkett replacement. And now they've got Atkinson. Sorry, not Atkinson. Well, he was bad.
I mean,
now they've got
Overton and Atkinson are in the squad.
No, Overton and Cass.
Yes.
Right? But those two have to bowl in the middle. So where do you bowl Wood? And it gets a little bit cluttered because I think they have a lot of guys who are weirdly more suited to that kind of role. And at times, Overton did it very well. And there was one good spell. All of them had like a good spell or a good game. But looking at them all together, there's like a clutter of people with similar kinds of skills.
Yeah.
Now, again, if this becomes a really good batting wicket, World Cup, it's a trophy, I should say, which we almost never see. But let's assume it's going to be that kind of thing. Then I think having Cass and Overton and Wood being able to bowl short actually helps, because then you're in a situation where you're trying to flat bat it back over the bowler's head and everything else. If it's not, I don't know how England are going to be able to put pressure on. And the fact that they can't play spin, and on top of that, a lot of their normal batting is so high risk compared to a team like India or South Africa, where they look like their batting is just much more repeatable.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the one thing probably going for England, if they get it right, is that a lot of those guys bowl quick. I've seen Brydon Carse, bowl fairly quick. And Jofra, as we know, on his day can be he has blistering pace. Mark Wood is probably the fastest bowler in contemporary cricket, I would say, like if you look at average speeds. So, yeah, I mean, they could, potentially hurry batters. And also, I feel like Adil Rashid is still Adil Rashid. So his 10 overs will be crucial. England's cause. He was the main guy for them in India, right? Like, it was Adil Rashid or bust. And then you've got Livingston for some buffer overs as well. So it's an interesting one. Hypercost over here has a super chat, or a regular chat. He says, isn't the most concerning injury to the minds of those of us that are so fixated on cricket that we are spending our Sunday watching a Champions Trophy preview? Surely qualifies as a terminal illness. I think always like a part of Jared Kimber dies whenever he talks about the Champions Trophy in any sort of context.
Yeah, weirdly enough, this is almost the time I enjoy talking about it a little bit more, because this is the assemble stage where you're just like, okay, so England's got all these pieces and how do we put them together? But yeah, it's, there's clearly something wrong with all of us, but that's why we're here.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see whether or not England can turn the tide, because, Butler's been saying that the approach is good. It's just that execution
isn't
good.
The approach is not good. The approach isn't good.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be
It's not working. Livingston. Yeah, I think it was the third ODI watching Livingston. It was like, all he's trying to do is slog, right? Like, that. There's a difference between that and what they used to do.
Yeah.
It's really clear to us that it's not the same.
Is the real positive with the bat, like Duckett? He's been doing well, right?
I don't mind. The Duckett and Salt thing, I don't mind. The problem is that because England are like pushing them to go so hard, they have to go out. And at times, one of the biggest problems was Duckett going out early, right, before the spinners came on. And it's like, well, now you're not even using one of the few guys who can play spin.
True. Anyway, let's wrap up Group B with South Africa. And it's fast bowlers that they're going to be missing. Of course, Anrik Nokia and Gerald Coetzee. Both are out injured. And I think Nandre Berger also hasn't quite recovered from his injury. And Bartman, last I checked, was injured as well. But despite all of these, injuries to fast bowlers, they can still form a three-man pace attack of Marco Jansen, Kagiso Rabada, and Lungi Ngidi, who's also coming back from injury. But I watched him in this trial series and he looked pretty bang average, Lungi Ngidi. Wasn't looking good at all. So maybe they might not even play him and might go for Mulder, Shamsi and Maharaj. So it's interesting, right? Because South Africa are the team that don't have depth, but Mulder might allow them to have some depth because Janssen at 8 would be great. That right?
I don't know. Well done. Mulder wasn't bowling a lot in the SA20. Mm-hmm. So he started bowling again just at the end of the tournament. But even then, he wasn't bowling a lot. Hmm. And he went for 79 runs the other day when they did make him bowl a lot.
Yep, but he was getting the ball to wobble early on and he got rid of, you know, both Barber and Fakhar. So that's worth something.
Did he open?
He might have. I think so.
Well, because my only question then is, he's not going to open in this team, is he?
Mm, that's also fair.
Right? So the thing with William Mould, I'm just trying to have a look now. And no, he bowled first change, so that's not too bad. The issue is kind of where he bowls. If he's fit, it fixes a lot of problems for them, right? Yeah. If he can't bowl 7 or 8 overs, because I think if he bowls 6 to 7 overs and Markram can bowl 2 to 3, that gets them to 10 overs, which, as you said, then gets Janssen batting at 8. That's suddenly, that's a much stronger lineup than we've seen from them for a long period of time.
Absolutely. Also, they've got Corbin Bosch for cover, and he's quick. Corbin Bosch can consistently bowl 140 plus. So I think that's a bit of a luxury as well, because he's not as good a bat as Mulder, but he's good. He's not bad.
I think Corbin Bosch isn't... My memory of Corbin Bosch is that he can bat. Like in first class cricket, doesn't he average something ridiculous? He averages 41 in first class.
Oh, 41. Yeah. Okay then.
Yeah. Probably an upgrade. I think he's faster than William Mulder. I don't think he's... But he can go... I could be wrong with this, but I don't know if he was always a specialist bowler or if he was just injured a lot when he was younger and he couldn't bowl as much. William Mulder knows exactly what he's doing. Corbin Bosch, sometimes he can go a bit off the rails. But they have those two and they can play one of them at 7.
Yeah.
They still need one more bowler in their lineup. And unless they play both of those guys, of course, which is another option. And then Marco Janssen at 9. But so... Shamsi was getting pulled out of the attack in the SA20, mate.
And
he wasn't
even
bowling
in this,
his full overs.
Even in the Straya series, man, I cannot tell you how bad he was. I think the best days of Tabrez Shamsi are behind him. And Maharaj is great, but that's a big question mark for South Africa. Like 10 overs of Shamsi, maybe you should just play Ngidi then.
but again, that's the issue. I think both of those guys are not particularly in great form.
Yeah.
The one that, it's a real shame, the one that probably, the other spinner, oh my God, I've forgotten his name. Who
Mutasami.
Bowled, no, there's the left armer who opened the bowling in, opened the bowling.
George Linder.
Well, George Linder is not the guy I was thinking of.
Okay.
But yeah, George Linder was another one.
Bjorn Fortein.
Bjorn Fortein, who I've never rated before as a bowler. And I watched him in this last tournament. I was like, oh, he's taken a huge step up. Like, he's really in control of himself. I mean, obviously this is, not what they can do now. But one of Ngidi and Shamsi has to be playable looking at this squad, don't they? Like, or you just go, we hope that William Mulder and Corbin Bosch can bowl 16 to 17 overs between them, right? You know, because you are gonna steal a couple of overs out of Markram, you know, occasionally, aren't you? So you do have something there. But it feels very risky to me. And the thing is, it's a big change to what they have been doing, right? Which is going in with 5 specialist bowlers. And suddenly it's like, will they, you know, and I'm not saying that Corbin Bosch and William Mulder are not specialist bowlers, but they're not frontline bowlers at international level. It's certainly the roles that they will have to play. You know, it's not exactly what they do. So you're doing whatever you have to do. Both of these guys have talent. Both of them can perhaps pull this off. But so far in his career, I think William Mulder, as my memory of William Mulder anyway in ODI cricket, is he goes for runs and he doesn't take wickets. If you pair him with Corbin Bosch, who again, I have his record in front of me. So Corbin Bosch has taken 77 first class wickets at 35, and in List A cricket has an average of 39, again going at more than a run a ball. These are not frontline international bowlers, right?
Yeah.
If you have to play both, it just changes what your team is.
That's
right?
True. Also, funnily enough, Matthew Breetska was phenomenal in the Tri series. Scored 150 on ODI debut, broke Desmond Haynes' record when Haynes, I think, scored 148 back in 1978. So that record was standing for nearly 50 years. And then he doubled up by scoring 83 in his second ODI. He's now part of the squad, right? So that's another interesting thing.
He's a really interesting cricketer because was it the IPL he went in this year as well? And like, there's been a lot of hype for him just of recent times. But yeah, he's not in the squad. That's the thing. They've got a couple of like little form blips. I mean, they've got some in their batting as well. Yeah. You know, Heinrich Klaassen. If Heinrich Klaassen isn't Heinrich Klaassen, that changes the kind of team they are again, yep. Right? So Ngidi and Shamsie and Klaassen will change the kind of side they are. But Stubbs, I saw him play some good knocks. Markram, I think, made runs at the start of the tournament. David Miller made a ton of runs. Yeah. They've still got that core. And they've got three really good bowlers, right?
Yes. Like
Maharaj, especially in these conditions, and then the two fast bowlers. They could do a lot of damage. They should be the number one ranked side in this in this group.
Yep.
And they should be the automatic qualifier in this group.
I feel the same. And plus, if you look at that batting order, right? Let's assume Tony DeZorzi opens the batting with Bavuma, right? Then you've got Rickleton, Markram, Stubbs, Klaassen, Miller. These are pretty good batters, right? And some of them are mighty explosive as well. You know, Stubbs, Klaassen and Miller. Any team would love to have those guys at, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 or whatever. So, or 4, 5, 6 even. So I feel like South Africa are definitely like the favorites from this group at least. But then again, you know, it's an ICC event. One that they've won in the past and with a shit team.
So does that mean it doesn't count? I don't know.
I don't know.
Genie says, India, South Africa, Afghanistan and Bangladesh, my top four. If Bangladesh make the semifinals of this, my God, man. Like watching them, I've watched them play a lot of one-day cricket over the last year and a half. No, it's not for me.
Yeah. What would be your top four, Jared, just on the top of your head?
Three of those are in, and then, it's probably it's Pakistan or New Zealand, but I'm probably leaning slightly more towards Pakistan, but it could easily be New Zealand.
I'm actually slightly leaning towards New Zealand. I feel like that first game, the tournament opener, will pretty much decide who qualifies alongside India.
Yeah.
Unless it's one of those weird tournaments where India don't qualify for the semi, which rarely happens these days, but it does happen sometimes. And it is such a shootout of a tournament, right? The Champions Trophy, where you win 2 games out of 3 in the group stages, and then you just got to win 2 more and you lift the trophy. So it's really interesting in that regard. But yeah, I mean, I have South Africa and I'm just going to go for Australia in Group A, B. And then I'm going New Zealand, India in the first group. I don't know. I'm not really feeling it from Pakistan, and we'll get to them. But before we move on to Group A, let's take a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Behram and Jared. Go nowhere. We'll be back very, very shortly.
And that is why Nasser Hussain decided to bowl first at the Gabba. And this all, of course, reminds me of Hit Wicket, which is a mobile cricket strategy game that is all about making those tough decisions. Who do you want to send in as an opener when the asking rate is climbing? Do you go for the big hitter or the steady accumulator? Me, I like to throw in someone a little bit unorthodox, a bit of a wild card like the general. That keeps the opposition guessing. And what about the bowling attack? Do you unleash your express pace early or hold back for the death overs? I'm always tempted to bring on a mystery spinner in the middle overs and just try and break a partnership. Hit Wicket puts you in the captain's chair. You draft the squad and select the batting order and even decide when to use those game-changing abilities. Do you burn your 2x ability to chase down a big total or save it for a critical moment later on? It's strategic, it's addictive, and it's more nerve-wracking than facing a Shoaib Akhtar bouncer. Give it a go. Download Hit Wicket and see if you've got the tactical nous to win.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared. And we've covered all the absentees from Group B and how that might impact each of those teams. Now let's move on to Group A. And someone mentioned Bangladesh, so let's just start over there. I'm not going to give you guys India and Pakistan so soon. We got to keep you till the end of the video. So Bangladesh actually don't have a lot of absentees. I mean, you could count Shakib maybe because of his bowling action being deemed illegal.
Litton Das?
Yeah, Litton Das, even though he averaged, what, 1? In the previous year in ODIs?
Tamim Iqbal?
Is he retired right now?
So, I mean, they don't... I mean, Shakib's probably the main one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because you would want to have him in that. Hmm. Litton Das was obviously had one of the worst years in the history of our sport last year.
He wasn't lit in ODIs last year. Let's just say that.
Oh, he had a lit ass. I can tell you that. No, he really did have one of the... He had what I'm now referring to as a Prosper Utsaya year after seeing so many stats of how bad Prosper Utsaya has been in his career. So I suppose that's 3 pretty experienced, good quality players. Like if you're going up against them as a team, that's probably a big deal to not see those names. Obviously, Jacob Ali started batting at number 7, and he's been quite interesting. You know, Asumi Osaka is back for his 9th comeback, I believe.
Yeah, and for his 48th good-looking cover drive, after which he loses his wicket. Your man Shanto is there. He's pretty confident. He said that Bangladesh are going in to win it.
Yep. I think he meant the toss, but I actually like their bowling lineup quite a bit. It's just I can't see how on any kinds of wickets they're ever going to be able to back up that bowling lineup. And, you know, there's some really interesting moving parts to the bowling lineup. And obviously Mahedi batting higher up the order allows them to have a slightly more all-round side and everything. But they just have, like a lot of slow batters at the top. Then they have a pinch hitting number 4 because no one else is particularly good at it. Maybe they can get to a bit where they can make subpar scores, and then the bowlers just bring it home for them. Yeah. Because they've got leg spin, they've got off spin, they've got genuine pace, they've got left. They've got the fizz. They've got Cutler. You know, they've got right arm in Taskin.
Yes,
they've got quite a few options available to them.
So if you think about that bowling attack,
more than 275, aren't they?
Yeah. If you think about that bowling attack, actually, Mehdi off spin, Rishad leg spin, both of those guys can hit big. That's a big bonus, right? Then you've got Nahid Rana, who's hitting 150 fairly regularly, and he's as fast a fast bowler that we've ever seen from Bangladesh. Taskeen was the guy who we'd say that for before Nahid Rana, that he's the fastest ever that Bangladesh has ever seen. And the fizz is experienced by now, and he brings that left arm angle. It's a very, very decent bowling attack. It can challenge, but with the bat, you mentioned Jaakir Ali. I can throw in a Tauhid Ridhoy, perhaps, just on potential. Yeah. But isn't it funny that Shakib and Tamim are both gone, and Mahmudullah is still around?
He is. I think he played for Pakistan in 1969. I think still around. I think he was still part of East Pakistan at that stage.
Forget that. I think Mahmudullah even saw British India days based on
that. Yeah, he might have played for India, and we've just forgotten. That's how far back his career goes at this point. It is quite weird. Look, you look at Afghanistan, and I think what Afghanistan have compared to Bangladesh is the ability to make repeatable 260 to 290 scores. Whereas I think with Bangladesh, not only do they not score very quickly, they can kind of crumble a little bit as well. They don't have that sort of, they don't have a clockwork like top order in the way. Look, if no one's ever seen Jacob Ali bat before, and it's worth watching him. He's got one of the weirdest techniques in the world, and no one knows how to bowl to him. They look like, I remember watching the West Indies be genuinely confused as to what to do when bowling to him. So he is a lot of fun. So and Nahid Rana is genuine pace. It's not it's not one of those guys where you go, he's the fastest bowler in the country. He's just he's one of the fastest bowlers on earth, and he's got a bit of an odd action, a sort of staccato action, I suppose, at times about him. And so I don't think the ball bounces normally. And it's usually with him, I know the pace is a big part of it, but I've seen top players sort of struggle with the bounce that he can get.
Yeah. No, I think Bangladesh can surprise, because if they get to a par total in the bowling attack, you know, it's very capable of defending
surprise.
A par total.
Well, I mean, they've got the shit group, if that's what you mean. Like, surprise what? Like, they shouldn't win a game in that group.
They could win one game at most. Maybe they can upset one of Pakistan or New Zealand, perhaps.
It would be good if they, all they do is win one game, but it means that all the other teams have got 2 wins just for chaos.
You know what? I would have just picked Litton on vibes, because we know that he can do it, right?
Well, I mean, you are literally only picking him on vibes, not a single run.
Absolutely. But yes, unfortunately for Bangladesh, they are pretty much the weakest team in this group. And anyone, I think apart from Genius Genie, no one would have them in their semi-finalists predictions, I feel. Even like the most staunch Bangladesh supporter would struggle. But yeah, let's move on to New Zealand. And they've got some last-minute injuries over here. Lockie is under this cloud of uncertainty.
He's injured at the moment, but we don't know if he's playing.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, he's in the squad, but we don't know if he'll actually be fit in time for that tournament opener versus Pakistan. And they'll need him, because they'll need the 150 clicks, right? It's so important to have a middle overs enforcer who can crank it up. And him not being there, along with Ben Sears, who also got injured last minute, and Trent Bolt, as we know, New Zealand have moved on. Yeah, Tim Southee's officially gone, but Trent Bolt hasn't really announced his retirement, has he? So
I think he's available for selection, but when they didn't pick him for I think it was a test versus England when it first happened. Mm. It was quite clear that they had just decided to move on.
It's finally time that they do move on from him. But despite, you know, losing all three of those guys, I suppose, Lockie, Sears and Bolt, and Lockie still might play. I mean, he should, I suppose. Will O'Rourke has impressed in recent times. Matt Henry is pretty much one of the most underrated new ball bowlers going around. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, Jacob Duffy, Nathan Smith, you've got those guys, right? Not as strong a bowling attack of as New Zealand teams of the past. But when I look at the overall team composition, right? You've got two frontline spinners in Santner and Bracewell who turn the ball in opposite directions and can bat. So that gives them a lot of depth. And then they've got one Glenn Phillips who solves a lot of problems on his day, right? Conway hit some form, which was really important. Rachin Ravindra copped a blow to the head, but he'll be fine for the Champions Trophy. And then you've got Kane at number three. Latham at four, I think, is a bit of an issue for me. I would rather have Conway keep a wicket and Chapman come in for Latham, but I don't think New Zealand will do that.
I just think they've got the same issue as Australia, but without Travis Head.
Yeah. Also, sorry, Daryl Mitchell is at four, and then Chapman would make more sense at five. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. I'm trying to remember their batting order or what they will roughly go with. I just think they've got that same sort of one pace. If this is a high-scoring series... I think they struggle. And if it's a low-scoring series, where are their wickets going to come from if Henry doesn't take a bunch?
Yeah, that right? is a concern.
Because Santner, in his career, has not been a great wicket taker. He's a very good defensive bowler. Hmm. Bracewell perhaps could take some. Like, I don't know, Glenn Phillips, thieves wickets. But if it's a low score, so if you look at it, when we talk about New Zealand usually being better than you expect at ICC tournaments, it's almost always that because ICC tournaments are low-scoring, and because New Zealand take wickets at the top, right? Yep. So they always give you issues early on. A lot of that over the last couple of years anyway has been Trent Bolt and Tim Southee, right? So that's gone. Henry, I do rate. O'Rourke, I think, could be a really good one-day bowler, but I don't think he should be bowling with a new ball, but they don't. He's going to have to in this team because if Lockie's fit anyway. And Smith and Duffy, I mean, Duffy's done well of recent times. Smith gives him a little bit of batting, I think, as well. So they'll probably play them.
I really hope Duffy starts and has an all-time Champions Trophy so that I can just call him Duffy the Champion Slayer. That'll be great.
That's all we have time for today.
Yeah, or Duff Beer. Maybe there's a Duff Beer pun in there. But
I thought you were going Duff Beer, but you went in a different direction. Who knew?
You know, I actually feel like New Zealand have got a pretty solid team. I've watched them closely in this tri-series. They have played in Pakistan so much, Jared. They've played in Pakistan more than any other team, right? They know these conditions. They were looking like the home side in this tri-series. They were unbeaten.
If it's a low-scoring tournament, I think they are okay. If it's a high-scoring tournament, I just can't see how they could score at the levels of some of the other sides. I think they'll get stuck.
What if Rachin has a solid start and we know he can accelerate well? And then you've got the likes of Conway, Kane and Mitchell who can steady the ship. And then you just go a bit crazy with Glenn Phillips. And if they choose to play Chapman, which they won't, they'll continue to play Latham. That's the thing.
So Glenn Phillips, we've been waiting for this big boom for years. He's now, 28? So he's reaching near his peak.
And he just slammed a brilliant ton versus Pakistan as well in the first game of the tri-series.
If Glenn Phillips plays like I think Glenn Phillips should play, and he's, weirdly enough, he's been a lot better in one-day cricket than he has in T20 cricket probably consistently for them at international level. I feel a lot different about this team. Conway, I know he's back in a little bit of form, but my God, he was batting terribly for a long time. I'm going to need more than one or two good knocks to believe that he's back in. And then I just worry that they'll just get 2-1 paced at times. If that's what I mean, if it's a high-scoring tournament. If it's a low-scoring tournament, New Zealand finds a way Kane will be able to read the pitches better than anyone else in world cricket and be like, this pitch needs 245 runs. So I'm going to make 245. And we're all like, well, that's not enough. And then they win by 15 runs, right?
Yeah.
If that's the case, it can bring them back in. I don't think they're terrible. I tell you what, though, I reckon if I'm in Group B, I am looking at Pakistan, New Zealand and Bangladesh going, oh my God, how do we not get in this group?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, you've got three informed teams in Group A, in India, Pakistan and New Zealand. And, you know, the fact that they've got that luxury of having Phillips, Santner and Bracewell right up until number eight, I think they won't be gulbising it. It allows them to play a bit more freely. And Daryl Mitchell is one of those guys who, if he's on one, he'll smash you down the ground.
Okay, so here's the problem with that. Kane Williamson doesn't, it wouldn't matter, if you had 15 batters, Kane Williamson would still bat at his normal pace, right? That ain't changing Kane Williamson's batting. They had the super sub in the IPL and he was still knocking it around, right? And Mitchell just takes too long to get started, right? Mitchell's not a problem once he gets to 30 balls, but this is one of the reasons why Mitchell is not a star T20 player. He's a good T20 player. It's just that it takes him a little while, and Mitchell can stuff around.
Yeah.
Quite a bit, right? Well, for someone who can really hit the ball, my God, sometimes I'm watching him just going, just hit the ball for six, straight down the ground. They can't put fielders over the top of the side screen, buddy. Yeah. So I just, that's my issue with that kind of side. But if it becomes a 240 to 250 tournament, you know, they, I do think they come back in a little bit, because at that stage, Santner, what did he go for the other day? 20 runs and 10 overs? Like,
yeah. And I mean, Pakistan struggled versus left arm orthodox spin anyway. So, I mean, you'd have to take that with an ounce of salt.
The point is, in those low scoring, if it's a low scoring sticky wicket, you know, those sorts of Pakistani wickets that we see sometimes in the PSL, then they become a more interesting side, because Kane should be quite handy at being able to do that, right? Mitchell should be batting quite well on those kinds of wickets. Conway, if he could stay in, right? And then you've got, yeah, but I don't know what kind of wickets we're going to get. So
yeah.
I just think too many things have to go right for New Zealand. But because they're in the easier group, like not having to worry about Bangladesh being a genuine finals hope really changes your group.
That's true.
Right? Because if you lose that first game, right, you still have a chance of perhaps rocking India, and then you can crush Bangladesh if you need net run rate, right?
On the flip side,
if you look at the other group, it's like, if you look at the other group,
one good team will go over here though, right? That's the flip side of it.
Yeah, but two good teams will go in the other group, mate.
Yeah, that's also true.
Do you know what I mean? That's what I mean. There's a leeway here that you don't get in Group B. Yeah. Group B is like, it's so cutthroat, because we know that England can score 420 in one game, and we know that the Afghanistani spinners can spin the ball sideways. So it's just a very different, I think that allows you in this group to hopefully play your style of cricket, whereas in the other group, you just hold on and survive for the best.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Also, I feel like it's as complete a squad as New Zealand could have picked, right? Like, they have all of their resources at their disposal. And one, you know, note I will add just before, you know, moving on to the next team, is that they will need Lockie. He will have to get fit if they are to do well, or, you know, have pose a genuine threat to actually lift the trophy. Without him, I don't see it.
Yeah, I think one of their issues is, let's assume that Bracewell and Santner can do okay in the middle. I don't think they have a great death bowling lineup. And so Lockie at least gives them a weapon at the end, right? So they have something that can work for them there. Look, they could still get through to the finals if Lockie doesn't play, but they're not a realistic chance of winning if Lockie doesn't play, I don't think. I should say the real Lockie, because sometimes he has played and it's been like you or me bowling. Like, he needs to be at full Lockie.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, absolutely. And I do have them as early semi-final contenders for sure. But then, you know, you've got Pakistan and you never really know what you're going to get with Pakistan. They've never really moved on from that branding that they've had of being unpredictable and mercurial. And you know what? Had you asked me like a couple of months earlier what I was feeling with respect to Pakistan's chances, I would have said that, look, their ODI form is terrific. They won an ODI series in Australia, swept South Africa at home, became the first team to sweep South Africa in an ODI series in their own backyard, and they won in Zimbabwe as well. But one main protagonist...
They also lost the game in Zimbabwe.
They did. But one main protagonist from those series wins was Syam Ayoob. And Syam Ayoob was one of those modern, you know, limited overs batters who would be explosive at the start, a vast range or array of shots, right? And he was in form. Syam was literally, you know, taking the world by storm, and he's gone. And now they've bumped Babar up to opener. That means that someone else will have to bat at number three, you know, which is, in my opinion, the most important position in a batting lineup in ODI cricket. And then they've got too many of the same kind of batters in Saud Shakeel, Kamran Ghulam, Tayyip Tahir, throw in Khushdil in there, right? Like, it just, that batting order doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, right? And then there's the spinner issue. They still have that issue. Who's going to bowl all those overs of spin in the middle? Salman Ali Agha has done better than we expected him to. But if he's your best spinner on the day, then you've got a problem.
Yeah, it's a thin side. I think in some ways it might have a higher ceiling than New Zealand, but a much lower floor.
Yeah.
Like, if Shaheen works, then a lot of the issues you just said just don't matter as much, right?
Yeah, and Nassim actually did well in the last game as well. So
well, if both of them work,
yeah,
if both of them work, it's a completely we're talking about a completely different side. If these two manage to take wickets with the new ball, well, good luck beating this side, right? If they don't, then there's many ways this side can fall apart, right? Mm. Like I don't really like the sort of that 5-6-7 grouping at all. I was watching the game the other day and I was like, is this is the guys that we're going to kick off for?
Once that Rizwan and Salman partnership is broken, you're like, okay, where do we go from here, right? Pakistan, what's the plan?
Yeah, and so there are issues. Look, they are at home and traditionally teams haven't won all that much at home in major tournaments, but of recent times it's been a pretty big advantage, hasn't it?
But Pakistan aren't stellar at home. That's another thing, right? It's not like they're the team who dominated home. I think another big issue with Saim Ayoub's injury is that they were using him for buffer overs. He was the 5th/6th bowler with Salman Ali Agha, and now they've had to slot Khushdil in because they want him to bowl a few. And let's be real, Jared, like you and I could survive an over of Khushdil Shah, right? Like easy. So where are the wickets going to come from?
I don't know Abrar. If you could. I've seen you bat.
Fair. But Abrar...
I'll back myself.
Yeah. Abrar is someone who on his day can be very incisive, but when it's not his day, he's swept into oblivion, right? That's Abrar's issue.
A test happens when you're asleep. Where do you find the best match report? A cricketer's backstory is meticulously crafted by a great writer. But it's a day you're not on social media, and so you miss out. We all do this. It becomes almost a full-time job to follow the sport you love. But there is a solution. The emailer Best of Cricket can tell you what the main stories are and the best articles every single day. And when they can't find them, they even write their own. Now, instead of trudging through Twitter or Blue Sky, you can just wait for the Best of Cricket to email or WhatsApp the greatest cricket stories straight to you. Subscribe to Best of Cricket today.
I wonder if they just have to play him. That's what I've been thinking. Like, yeah. I looked at that squad the other day and I think we did the team maps and I was like, I just think, I didn't even have it as a question in my head. I know he may not start, but in my head, I was just like, I think they just have to play him.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a that puts them in a situation where it could go very right or very wrong, which is what we're talking about with ceiling and floor with them as a side.
Basically.
I kind of feel that because of the bowling, they have the ability, it's a seam bowling, I should say. Because you've got, let's say the two seamers up front work and Harris Ralph works. It means you can never really be comfortable against them when you're batting.
I'll counter that. Even if the first two new ball bowlers work, let's say Shaheen and Nassim pick up 3 wickets in the first 10 overs. If Harris Ralph does not make it to this tournament, if he remains unfit, no one is taking wickets through the middle or at the
death. That's a big thing. There is no replacement for him.
Yeah.
If he's fit, what it means is that you can, if you've got 3 bowlers who are essentially strike bowlers, who are three very different kinds of bowlers as well, it allows you to sort of mix and match all the way through. Right. So that there is no period of knocking the ball around, which means that Pakistan can put wickets on all the time, which if you go back to New Zealand, they don't really have that. Right.
Yeah.
If Matt Henry doesn't take wickets at the top or Willow Rook with him, if he's going to open the bowling with him, you might get a really nice spell of like Willow Rook later on. But you've got a defensive spinner, Bracewell, and is more of a high functioning part time spinner. Right. And neither of them are massive wicket takers. You have a bit of an issue there, and you go back to South Africa. South Africa might have that problem as well, right? And modern one-day cricket is really about the ability to take consistent wickets, right, all the way through. Because if you don't, the guys are going to score 100 runs off the last 10 overs.
Absolutely.
Right? Maybe not Pakistan, but other sides are going to score 100 runs off the last 10 overs. And so you have to be able to take those wickets. So Pakistan's set up brilliantly for that. If everyone's fit and is in form, they're probably set up better than like Australia. And that's a traditional thing that Australia is really good at, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But that's the main question over here is that will Pakistan get their combination right? Will Babar Azam find some form, right? Are they going to remain over-reliant on both of Rizwan and Salman? Fakhar has shown us glimpses of good form. Can he
perform?
That's
another reason why I've got him slightly higher, just because it feels like he's back in a groove again.
Yeah. No, he has looked really, really good and he must be itching to get some big scores. And this is his tournament, right? He was the player of the final in 2017. So
exactly, he might be a Champions Trophy specialist.
Yeah. Well, Pakistan fans would be hoping that Fakhar Zaman has a worldie of a Champions Trophy, but I don't know. There's a lot going on with that combination that I'm not particularly fond of, which is why I don't have them as semi-finalists. But it's Pakistan. You write them off at your own peril. Like, I could not have them as semi-finalist contenders and I could say that they'll win the whole goddamn thing. Right? That's Pakistan.
I just think they have more weapons that can win them games than New Zealand. Hmm. But also, they might blow their own foot off.
Yeah, and I feel like Haris Rauf better see the best doctors in the country because they'll need him. If he's gone, then Pakistan have major question marks because he's not just a middle overs and death overs enforcer, he's also quick. And he's consistently quick. And they'll need that. Anyway, that brings us to India. So thank you guys for staying with us, of course. We saved the best for last, I suppose. And the biggest injury shock, I would say, or one that kind of takes the sheen away a bit from the tournament as well, is that Jasprit Bumrah has been ruled out of the entire tournament. But that set off a few things, Jared, right? So we all probably a good chunk of us thought that Siraj might replace Bumrah, but then Harshit Rana ended up replacing Bumrah. And then Jaiswal also went out of the squad and made room for Varun Chakravarti. So I was having this very detailed conversation with our teammates, Shayan, Alok, Saurabh, Varun, all of us were talking about what India should kind of do or what sort of combination they would go with. I feel like playing both of Akshar and Jadeja might be a defensive option over here, especially when you don't have the likes of Jasprit Bumrah. You know, those are big 10 overs. And then again, you know, India also have a risk of gulbising it if they play too many specialist bowlers. So where do you go?
The India question marks is really interesting because they could cover Bumrah at the top, I think. Now, the issue is that maybe their best new ball bowler hasn't even always been Bumrah. It might have been Siraj at times as well.
Exactly.
But I think they can. I think Ashdeep is good enough and Mohammad Shami should be good enough to be able to do that.
So you would have Shami open the bowling with Ashdeep and then have Harshit Rana come through the middle? Because I would prefer Shami to be first change.
Yeah, you could do that as well. But I think Shami's a much better bowler than Harshit Rana with a new ball. Like, I don't think there's any combination there.
Maybe Pandya?
They have to use all three of their frontline seamers. I don't think they're going to go into a game with three frontline seamers.
Ooh, so just Pandya as your third seamer.
Yeah. Mm. And we've seen, you know, Pandya's bowling okay. Like, I don't think there's any issue there. But that means they don't really have a good death bowler unless Shami is completely on form. And if Shami's on form, I think he can pull some of that back. And that's the issue, is because beforehand, they're Jasprit Bumrah at the death.
Yep.
So you're not replacing that with anything. Whereas Harshit is probably their better bowler towards the end.
Mm-hmm. I like him with the old ball, right? He has some good slow ones. He can get some good carry. I'm not saying I don't like Harshit Rana. I'm just saying that a lot of people have been saying that Siraj was overbowled. Well, I mean, this is a major ICC event. I'd still go with Siraj. Gives me more confidence.
Yeah, I don't think. Well, I'd be very interested to know. If it's very weird to me. Let's say he was overbowled. Shouldn't he still be in the squad?
Yeah.
And if he's not in the squad, that probably tells me that they are only planning on going with two seamers and having one as a backup. And, so that changes them a little bit. Look, Varun Chakravarti, I think if you were picking a T20 bowler or T20 spinner right at the moment, he's the best number one in the world.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and so... I think India have just worked out no one's playing him at the moment. They don't really understand what's happening. Perhaps he was slightly flattered by bowling against England batters. But, you know, he bowled some good spells against South Africa as well. So if you have Varun Chakravarti and two frontline seamers, I'm assuming you can use your two left arm finger spinners and you've got Hardik and you've got a longer batting lineup and you've got three, what you hope for are strike bowlers. But if Ashdeep and Shami don't take wickets early on, then you go back to what you're talking about, which is, I think, a little bit too defensive with the ball.
And a bit too predictable.
But maybe that's how they win this World Cup,
you know,
right?
It's not a World Cup, Jared.
ICC event. Because think about it from this point of view. If you get to, if they're at the moment, they look like they can score 20% above par anytime they want to, right?
Easily, yeah. I mean, they are going ballistic, you know, with the bat.
So my bigger problem is that they always go with defensive options, right? But they go with defensive options with the bat and the ball at the same time, right? True. If you're planning on scoring 20% more than par with the bat all the time, Jadeja's a great bowler. Because now you've got 10 overs of him dropping the ball on a dime and you have to take risks against him. Akshar's a really good bowler as well in that situation. So I'm not saying they become strike bowlers necessarily, but what they do become is their defensive options are heightened by the fact that you can score extra runs. So, you know, there were times when England was playing against Jadeja where I was like, God, what are they going to do? Because if they take a risk off him, you can't just be none for 55 off Jadeja, because if India are scoring so much quicker, right? Like, so I think that is their strength. What they've lost is their insurance, which is what happened in the last World Cup final. They're going to lose that game. Hardik Pandya took a lovely little wicket, but realistically, they won that game because Jasprit Bumrah was still had overs to bowl, right? They don't have that anymore. So they have to keep batting the way that they have. So I think what you do, if I was involved with them, I'd be saying, make sure that you're batting down to eight, right? And know that you have two defensive bowlers there. Go as hard as you can with the bat and then hope that the bowling holds together. And if Varun Chakravarti continues to take wickets at the current rate he's at, and one of Shami or Ashdeep can take some early wickets, I think that's enough to at least slow people down so they can't score at India's level.
So would you play Chakravarti ahead of Kuldeep then?
Oh, at the moment I would. I'd play Chakravarti ahead of Rashid Khan at the moment.
Damn. Okay, so let me just kind of get this playing 11 in my head, right? Because with India, it's easier. You've got Gill and Rohit up top, Virat Kohli at three. Shreyas Iyer has done well at four versus England. He'll retain that spot. Thank God for him. They just don't seem to have a lot of confidence in him, and some person needs to get injured for Iyer to even get a shot. At five, I feel India are going to go KL, but I would have played Pant.
No, they'll go KL. I think they just... I mean, Pant probably... If he'd been playing consistent cricket over the last couple of years, maybe that would be his spot, but I think they'll go with KL. But obviously, they'll use Akshar as a floating player against spin as well. So they've got that versatility available to them as well.
Absolutely. And then you've got Hardik Pandya at six. You get Akshar Jadeja or one of those guys along with Washington if there are a lot of left-handers in the opposition.
They can go Washington as well, yeah.
Which would be really interesting. Maybe New Zealand, right? Rutchin, Conway, Tommy Latham. It's a lot of left-handers in there.
Yeah. I mean, they could go with that lineup if they wanted to. I don't think they need Washington in this tournament. But they might feel that they want him to come in and play in one game. And again, it just gives them more options, as you said before.
And then for the last three players, you've got Shami, who will definitely play. Arshdeep with the new ball is probably a sure shot at this point. And then you go with one of Kuldeep or Varun Chakravarti. So India actually, in a very open tournament, what I think is a very open tournament, just by design and with respect to where each team is at and the fact that Bumrah's not available, they, despite all of that, are still probably favourites, aren't they?
Oh, they're massively favourites. I think they've shortened... Partly because of the way they played against England and all the injuries to everyone else. Even without Bumrah, they haven't really, I think they've come in a little bit. So I can't remember what they are. I think they were 3-1. So they're somewhere around 2.5 to 3-1. Australia is about 5-6-1, which I think is short. I don't think there's another team that should be shorter than 7-1. Right, because every other team has some kind of flaws or some kind of unanswered questions. And South Africa should be second favourites. And the last time I checked, Australia was still second favourites quite clearly. So India, even without Bumrah, can certainly win this tournament, but partly because of the injuries and the form and the group. The group really helps. Like, if you think about it, if I'm right and Afghanistan can make a meal out of Australia and England and they make it, South Africa should be number one in their group.
Yeah.
Which means that India should have to play Afghanistan in the semi-final. Like, they're the perfect team to go up against. New Zealand don't want to play Afghanistan in a semi-final.
True. India Pakistan don't either.
I think you're right. Whereas India would be like, that is the ideal semi-final opponent for us. You know, like in the last Champions Trophy, who did India play in the semi-final?
It was Australia? No. England. Oh, Champions Trophy. Champions Trophy is Bangladesh. Yes, sorry. I was thinking T20 World Cup.
So you think about that, like if India can end up with a good run again, they've got the easy group. They might end up with the easy semi-final if things go the way that I think they could go.
Yeah.
They might also end up having to go up against England or Australia in the semi-final. I don't think they'd be that upset with that either. Yeah. They just don't want to be up against South Africa in that semi-final.
I think you're right over there. One last thing with respect to India. Of course, they'll be playing their games in the UAE. Have you watched a lot of the IL T20? I haven't, but I've heard that seamers have been doing well. So we expect the spinners to, you know, run riot in the UAE, but what if that's not the case?
UAE wickets are really weird, by the way, because you can make really fast bouncy wickets over there occasionally. I've seen seamers dominate, and yet I've also seen the pitches that are just like slow, low, you know, mud heaps, like what Pakistan used to play in on the old days. This is the great thing with ICC events is the ICC get involved and they kind of, I don't want to say stuff up the wickets, but they can actually sort of produce weird things. If it's spinning heavy wickets, then India can just cruise through that group, right? If they're not, and it's something else, that actually becomes far more interesting.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll get Harshit coming into the side.
Absolutely. So that's something that we'll be all keeping a close eye on. And that kind of wraps up all of the missing players and all of the teams as well. We've got some super chats though that we can quickly go through. And the first one over here is by Lentils. He says or asks, how after 20 years of playing, Shakib has been found out for illegal bowling. Also thoughts on Uganda cricket qualifying for the T20 World Cup and dominating the ODI Challenge League.
Okay, so the thing about bowling actions, Lentils, and if you're on my Instagram or my TikTok, I did a video about this the other day with Matt Kuhneman, because all the Australians said exactly what you're saying. Matt Kuhneman's 28 and he's been playing for years. How could he suddenly be called for chucking?
Also, sorry, like, I'm just going to stop you over there, but I can't get over the irony of an Australian spinner getting called out for an illegal action in Sri Lanka.
You know? It was quite good.
Yeah.
I also like the Sri Lankans getting really upset about the action. Like I had some people sending me the emails and I was like, guys, come on now. So what happens with bowling actions is they don't stay the same.
Hmm.
Like there's this idea that you start bowling one way and you know his physicality changes. In Shakib's case, he's old and he bowls not fast, but fast-ish finger spin at times, right?
Yeah.
In order to keep that pace, he probably has to do things that means that his action will degrade and change. His shoulder won't be the same. His elbow won't be the same. His fingers won't be the same. His body won't be the same. He'll get muscular. He'll get fat. He'll get skinny. Why do we just assume that someone's going to bowl the same all the way? And if you talk to bowlers, they will tell you that just sometimes you run in and bowl. And when you're running into bowl, you're like, oh, I chucked that. In fact, I was watching the under-11s today, my son's under-11s, and there was a kid who ran in and he bowled three balls absolutely perfectly. And the fourth one he came in and he started yelling and screaming because he realized he'd accidentally chucked it.
Hmm.
And he had. He just lost his action for a second. And I can tell you the most famous fast bowlers in the world, if I'm having dinner with or drinks with, I always ask. They say, yep, happened all the time. So you get things like that happen. And I think it was it Sonny Ramenden or was it Tony Locke? It was one of the old 50 spinners said, I know I wasn't throwing when I started. Hmm. And I know towards the end of my career I was. And they were just being honest. And it was just, they were trying to do the same thing and they're trying to do the same thing you change. So this idea that you will just bowl normally all the same way through is just, that's not how life works. You change all the way.
Another example is Syed Ajmal. He got tested in 2009 and he cleared everything, right?
Wait a minute. That was science. If I remember correctly, that was science.
Yeah, science is the man. But yeah, I mean, Misbah had him bowling, 50 overs per innings in test cricket and then bam, a few years later, his action's gone.
I actually think faster finger spinners is probably the ones most likely because as you get older, you probably do slow down a little bit. And so you're trying to bowl quicker and your action just acts. And Kuhneman is another faster finger spinner. So I think it can happen to faster finger spinners more than anyone else without them knowing. And then you get Ajmal when they get told and they don't believe it, right?
Yeah.
And I was with a bowler who was told once. It was a really interesting story. And he was in tears and he's like, no, I fixed this. I fixed this. It isn't happening. And he looked at the video and he was like, it's happening again. I don't know how to stop this.
Absolutely. Anyway, final super chat of the show. Sheratan KD asks, you think MS Dhoni would have scored 15 off Nisham in the last over in the 2019 World Cup semi? I think Dhoni would have gotten 13 and then Guptill would have run him out.
I've got a memory that for whatever reason, there was a short boundary for the World Cup final. I know this sounds random, but I've got a or maybe it was the wind was blowing. And so everyone was hitting in that corner. And that would not help Dhoni because for him, that would have been over cover or extra cover. And the other hit on the leg side was the harder hit. So actually, you'd be better off to have a left-hander in batting at that stage than you would a right-hander, if I remember. If I'm remembering that, I was commentating it with SEN at the time, back when people liked them, if I remember correctly. So that's my memory of that. So that actually would, any right-hander would have struggled a little bit more. But if you're facing Jimmy Neesham, I think you've got to back yourself if you're a, you know, MS Dhoni, Joss Butler, you know, Ben Stokes, you know, name your good Kyron Pollard type of player because you're going up against the person who is not a frontline bowler.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Anyway, that kind of wraps up all the Super Chats as well. So thank you to everyone who sent us those Super Chats and just for your general interactions in the comments section. That's it for this show. And just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage, and that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. We'll be back soon enough with some new shows. We've got a brand new show coming to your screens this week, and Varun is spearheading it, so keep an eye out
for
that.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Also, like, the Champions Trophy is right upon us, right?
We'll be doing heaps of stuff on the Champions Trophy.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine every time there's a crazy game, Jared and I will just jump on it live. I think that's how we're going to do this. Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to do our normal show. We haven't really planned anything at the moment. My kids are off on half term for the first week, so we'll work it out, but we'll do as much as we can content-wise. And there's plenty of stuff over for the main channel. I think it's either Monday or Tuesday. I go back and look at the 2004 Champions Trophy final. Uh-huh. And I've also got a video on Pakistan winning in 2017 as well.
Nice. So yeah, lots of content for you guys to look forward to. But that's all for today. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.